Celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation with the new Martin Luther plush figure. It features the 16th century reformer holding the Bible and Luther's morning and evening prayers. Go to reformationgear.com, use the coupon code ISSUESETC, and 20% of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. reformationgear.com, the new Martin Luther plush figure, reformationgear.com, and enter the coupon code ISSUESETC.
I think that the person that I pick will be a big, big, I think people are going to love it. I think evangelicals, Christians will love my pick.
The order violates this First Amendment by targeting Muslims and favoring Christians.
One of the worst things that people can do to sandbag their marriage, thinking it's actually going to help to road test their marriage, is to cohabit.
Our conscience is calibrated by the Ten Commandments, which means that I'm making a judgment on what is right and what is wrong based on the Lord's Ten Commandments. But then the conscience can only be comforted by the death and resurrection of Jesus and the forgiveness of sins.
This is Jeff from Indiana. Soldiers on the firing line, love, Issues, etc.
Sounds like good news. At least initially it does sound like good news. The rate of premarital, extramarital sex among millennials, that generation that's going to live most of its life in the 21st century rather than the 20th, that rate of premarital, extramarital sex is dropping. Sounds like good news, but is it necessarily good news? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon, February the 13th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the sex lives of millennials and why that might not be the best news we could hear. Pastor Hans Feeney of the Federalist will be our guest. A little bit later, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Mark Burkholz of Concordia University, Chicago. On the 13th of February, the church remembers Aquila and Priscilla, husband and wife and fellow workers with Paul in more than one sense, and Apollos, who figures into that mix as well. We'll remember them along with Dr. Mark Burkholz. Dr. Alan Carlson will join us, former president of the Rockford Institute, Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society. We'll talk about capitalism and the family. Does capitalism have as its primary interest a strong family unit? Then it's open lines. We've been asking this question on Facebook, and we want your answer to the question there and elsewhere. And when the time comes, our open lines question, should the Johnson Amendment, that is this 1954 addition to the tax code that prohibits churches and other nonprofit organizations from directly or indirectly participating in or intervening in any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for elective public office, should the Johnson Amendment be repealed? President Trump has promised to do just that. Will it be good for churches or bad for churches? What do you think? We want your answers during open lines, Issues, etc. A little later here in the program. In that vein, our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. And you can leave your answer to the question, should the Johnson Amendment be repealed? If not, why? If so, why? At our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about the sex lives of millennials, Pastor Hans Feeney. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column, Why It's Terrible News That Millennials Are Having Less Sex. Pastor Feeney, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Good to be here.
What was your initial reaction when you saw that the extramarital, premarital sex rate among millennials was going down?
Well, the initial reaction is joy, I suppose, optimism, because you think, you assume that this is for good reasons, that perhaps they are discovering the kind of the vacuousness of the hookup culture, or that they're certainly, your initial thought is, well, maybe people are actually rediscovering Christian morality, and they're rediscovering that people actually kind of knew what they were talking about when they said that valuing marriage and faithfulness and fidelity is actually good and is better for you, better for your spiritual well-being, better for your emotional and physical well-being as well. So that's kind of the initial reaction. And then then you find out why, and you go, oh, well, then that's actually not good at all.
The analogy you use has to do with a NFL commissioner getting some what sounds like good news at first. What's the analogy?
Oh, yeah. So the analogy was, it would be like if you're the commissioner of the NFL and you're having a problem with guys on the Dallas Cowboys roster getting in trouble, you know, for drug arrests or domestic abuse arrests, things of this nature. And so you have someone come into your office and say, hey, good news, commissioner, everybody on the Cowboys roster has finally stopped breaking the law. And you go, oh, that's great. Well, how did this happen? You know, did we finally start seeing fruit from our Stop Being a Terrible Person campaign? And they go, oh, no, it just happened because the team plane just exploded. So everyone's dead. That's the reason why it is that they are no longer breaking the law. And you go, oh, well, that's worse than the problem still being there.
Tell us who the millennials are in a nutshell and why it is not necessarily good news that they're having sex outside of marriage less.
Yeah, so the millennials are, I've seen a number of different definitions as to kind of when this generation begins. I tend to say the beginning of the millennial generation is those born on or after December 21st, 1980, because I was born the day before. So I don't want to be a part of the millennial generation. I kind of have some overlap, but I think just sort of personality-wise, I identify a bit more with kind of that tail end of the Gen X generation. So this is a generation that's grown up highly technological. They've had access to the Internet for most of their lives. And a generation that is has very much on account of that grown up in a world of instant gratification. And it's also a generation, in particular with the younger millennials, is a generation that has been exposed to hardcore pornography and has had that available to them basically in an on-demand capacity from a time really before they even knew what to do with it.
What have they been up to this point in terms of their sexual practices?
I suppose it's a little hard to tell. I mean, there's kind of some indication that sort of this concept of the hookup culture is in some ways unique to the millennials, or that it's at least quite popular among them. So this idea that it's almost as though sexual activity comes first, and then you sort of discover dating through that. And kind of this idea that you don't have any kind of emotional attachment to people, that sexual activity is almost kind of recreational, so that it's more so, it's almost in some ways used as a way of getting to know people. And so it kind of drives this chasm between sharing your body with someone and actual commitment to a person, which certainly seems to have exacerbated a lot of the problems as far as developing intimate emotional connections with other human beings.
Well, that seems connected to one of the reasons their active sexual rate is going down. What is it?
Yeah, so by all accounts, as I say in the article, the reason for the drop in sexual activity isn't at all because they're becoming more religious. That's really, it's quite the opposite, that the millennials are, in particular younger millennials, are the most biblically illiterate, most unchurched generation we've seen in quite some time. So what's happened is, with the advent of social media, and like with the aforementioned widespread availability of pornography, what's happened is that in the case of, in particular, millennial men, although there is certainly a problem of young women also viewing pornography as well, that they've basically rendered themselves incapable of understanding and valuing women really even before they'd get to the point where they would pursue them. And which is, I think, sort of the explanation for the drop. So in other words, kind of historically speaking, men would start off pursuing women, pursuing dating and relationships and things of this nature, but their kind of primary motivation on just sort of a biological level was sexual, so that they were trying to pursue sex, even if in their own understanding that was something that was going to be very far down the line, and even if they're, you know, Christians, even if that's something that's going to come after marriage, but they're following that kind of biological desire. And what would generally happen is that the more they would pursue women, the more they would get to know them, the more they would come to learn the wonderful gifts that God has designed women to give to men, these kind of what I call in the piece the feminine virtues, what St. Peter calls the imperishable beauty of a quiet and gentle spirit. And so the more that men would pursue women, the more they'd come into contact with these things, the more they would come to value these things, and the more, so the less their understanding of women would be purely sexual. It would involve far more things and far more of an appreciation of women. And but it was ultimately that desire for sex that would cause men to begin the process of pursuing women. And it's kind of a frightening process, just that whole thing of fear of rejection and kind of everything surrounded by that. By and large, men are willing to risk that in order to get sex. And then in the process, they come to really value women. Well, what's happened with the advent of social media and pornography is that pornography gives men enough sexual satisfaction that it's not worth the effort and the risk of getting shot down by a woman or pursuing a woman or even just the cost of taking a girl out on a date. So there's just kind of enough to sort of numb that aspect of you that you don't actually start pursuing women. The way my analogy in the piece is it's like the sexual version of eating a peanut butter sandwich or a bowl of cereal at 8 o'clock at night, because going out to eat at a fancy restaurant is just too much work and you got to put on clothes. And yes, of course, you know, a bowl of Cheerios isn't as good as filet mignon, but it's just right there. It's on demand, it's available, and you don't have to put any effort into it. And so I think this is what's happened, is that young men have been satiated enough sexually that they don't actually pursue women. And on account of that, they don't actually come to value and cherish the feminine virtues because they're not really coming into contact with them. And I think social media only exacerbates this problem, because social media basically teaches you that the kind of interaction you have with a human being via pornography is real, and that it's a normal thing to kind of substitute these cyber relationships for actual real relationships with human beings. So I think that's those two things coming together are a huge factor in the drop in. So in other words, it's not that millennial men are lusting less; it's that they're just simply acting out on their lust with other human beings less.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're talking about the sex lives of millennials on this Monday, February the 13th. The rate of extramarital and premarital sex is going down, but really for all the wrong reasons. Is this a curious fad, or is it in fact a troubling trend? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office. 314-416-8117.
Oh, Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the sex lives of millennials with Pastor Hans Feeney, senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column there, Why It's Terrible News That Millennials Are Having Less Sex. So is this a, as you say, a curious fad or a troubling trend?
Yeah, that's the question, and I don't really know the answer. I think sometimes kind of sociologically stuff is rather cyclical. And you'll have, you know, technological advances that really kind of mess people up and really alter the way that humans interact. And then over time, hopefully, you know, people kind of get things sorted out. That's the question about this. But I'm not terribly optimistic. I just think that there's sort of a public health crisis you have when, in particular, when young men are rendering themselves sexually dysfunctional before they even reach any kind of age of sexual maturity. The average age at which kids start encountering pornography on the internet is, you know, 9 or 10 years old. I read somewhere once, I don't know if this is accurate, but that the average teenage male spends about 2 hours a week viewing pornography online. I mean, this is just something that can't be sustained, and it's so fundamentally alters the way that men perceive women, and that by association alters the way that women perceive themselves, that I worry that this is going to be a long-standing problem unless we can find some way to fight against it.
Talk about, and you've hinted at this, but talk about how it is that marriage, or at the very least with these millennials, aiming toward marriage, that would be a good place to begin. How that creates space for a genuine love for your future spouse and for virtue?
Yeah, well, I think probably the easiest way to imagine this is just kind of look back at either at people you've known or just at people who are kind of at these ages now. If you were to ask the average 16-year-old boy if he would be interested in going out with a girl who was, you know, maybe a bit shallow or a bit dumb, or just kind of a bit stuck up, but if she was incredibly attractive, would he do it? Would he want to go out with her? And Matt, you'd probably get a higher percentage, certainly get a higher percentage than you would if you asked the same guys, you know, maybe 4 or 6 years down the line. So if you ask that question of a 22-year-old guy, 23, 24-year-old guy who's kind of, you know, getting of marrying age, you'd likely get a much different response. And I think the reason for that is that men start pursuing women sexually. They're usually driven by kind of physical attraction. And yet, as they pursue women, and which causes them to get to know them, then they come to discover this other stuff that's actually more valuable to them. And this is, you know, when they come to discover tenderness and kindness and compassion and loyalty and things of this nature. And so when that happens, when men do that, when they come to discover these things in women, they place a higher value on them, and they place less of a value on sexuality. Likewise, with women, I think what happens is when they meet young men and when they see that these feminine virtues that they have are actually valued and cherished, that they're actually worth something, then they start to amplify these things in themselves. This is an area in which I think that the kind of the second, third wave feminism has really, really harmed women, because it basically taught them. So kind of all these feminine virtues are gifts that are associated with motherhood. They're gifts that are associated with God designing women to be the bearers of life.
And I think what kind of later feminism has done is it basically, you know, it's sort of taught women, well, if you're interested in marriage and in family and in making that the most important part of yourself, you're selling yourself short and you're selling yourself out as a woman. And so by virtue of that, you shouldn't find value in these things. And likewise, men shouldn't be attracted to you because they think you'd be a good wife and mother. That's sexist. That's demeaning of you. That that means that they're not viewing you in a modern kind of woke way, as they would say nowadays. And I think what's happened with women is that those kind of things just receded, and so they didn't actually flaunt that stuff. Rather, what they flaunted was the only thing they had left, which was their sexuality. I think this is kind of why you oftentimes get the problem, you know, of young girls trying to attract men with sex before they're really even at the age where that's something that they genuinely want. But usually that ends up getting corrected in some measure, because even if girls kind of start off trying to sort of flaunt their sexual aspects of themselves, guys start to discover this other stuff, and they go, "Oh, yeah, this is something that he values and that other people value in me, and these are things that I cherish in myself." So those get amplified. It's sort of like in economic terms, all of a sudden that the currency of kindness and of faithfulness and of loyalty is worth much more. So the more that men and women interact, the more that they bring out what's best in each other. And so I think it's just bad for society once that kind of the dance of courtship and mating is, once that's just really torn to pieces by either people engaging in the hookup culture and basically just sidestepping all of that, or by people basically just kind of checking out of this sexual economy that completely devalues the feminine virtues.
I'm not a child psychologist, but I've raised a couple kids, and you're in the process of raising three boys, I believe. Still, you have a little breathing room. They're still a couple years off from this, but just common sense says that there's a window of opportunity here for young men to develop properly. It's like you say, it's not too late to turn off the computer. It's never too late. But is there a problem with the generation that just never went through that process that can't really be properly done as an adult out there with adult responsibilities and adult freedoms?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is why, again, this is why I'm rather fearful for this, and why it is I certainly sympathize with people who talk about how this kind of stuff, not just pornography, but social media addiction, is very much a public health crisis. Because it's one thing, you know, I think for kind of older generations who didn't necessarily grow up with this stuff, it's one thing for them to rediscover the foundation that they kind of lost through this kind of sewer of what we're dealing with. It's another thing if you never actually develop it. And how do you restore yourself if you've never actually been in that spot in the first place? And yeah, I think this is just a good reminder to parents to be very vigilant in ensuring, you know, that you're protecting your children from the stuff that you've got, you know, filters on computers and things of that nature, that you're really limiting your kids' access to social media, especially in kind of those kind of formative years. I suppose I'm fairly judgmental about the age at which people are, you know, getting their kids' phones and things of this nature. I just think it's nuts when I, you know, see kids as young as you'll find some who have their own phones, who are constantly on screens, who are not learning to interact with other people. It's just destroying their attention spans, which is obviously a completely separate issue. But this stuff is really, really, really harmful, and it's just pulling us away from real human connections. And we need more of those to kind of fend off the demons of self-destructive behavior.
But you do say it's never for the person on the other end of it, not for the parent watching their kids and worrying about their kids going into it. For the person on the other end of it, it is never too late to turn off the computer. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I mean, on the one hand, like I say, I mean, there's sort of this fear of, well, how do you get back to normal if you never really were normal? But at the same time, it's not like it's a great mystery for how we solve this stuff, which is just turn off your phones, close your laptops, actually go, you know, read books, have interactions with real people, get to know actual human beings, socialize with people in that regard. And I think that this is, you know, there's kind of been this weird resurgence in the last couple of years, sort of the defense of introverts, which I'm somewhat sympathetic to because I find myself to be a slightly more of an introverted person. But I do think that we oftentimes need to be careful about normalizing antisocial behavior. And humans were created to exist in communion with one another and obviously and chiefly in communion with God. But the reality is that when God invites us to commune with him, this is not something that we do on our own. We do this corporately with our fellow human beings. This is the whole creation account of marriage. It's not good that man should be alone. That this is, we weren't designed to be solitary creatures. And I think one of the downsides of social media is it gives us a, sort of enough of that feeling that we're not alone, even while we're maintaining our own little islands. And there's so much more joy in getting off of those islands, of actually in meeting real people. I find this to be a very, very true when it comes to kind of the arguing with people, talking politics and having religious debates with people, is that it's really easy to be cruel and nasty to people when it's just a screen, because that's not a real person. But when you've got a real person whose eyes you're looking into and who winces when you say, if you say cruel things about them, it teaches empathy, it teaches us how to value one another. And these are all really, really essential things for human interaction.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, every step forward in this kind of technology, maybe it was radio at first, and these crazy kids are listening to that rock and roll, and then it was television, they're watching too much television. And then, of course, the internet and social media probably came as the real big wave of technological events. Every single one of them have set off alarm bells all over the place, and it didn't kill any of us. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, probably killed some of us. There's probably some deaths you could point to where you could say, well, that was probably caused by that. So I saw a guy watching, I was driving down the road once, and I saw a guy watching, he was watching TV in his car as he was driving, had some little screen, like, up on his dash, and I thought, well, that's a good way to die, so there are probably some people that will. But in all seriousness, no, yeah, I mean, it is true that obviously with all technological advances, there's always a positive and a negative. There's always great things that come about from it, and there's always terrible things that come about from it. And the internet is just, I mean, the internet is the greatest thing in the world, and it's the worst thing in the world. Social networking is the absolute greatest thing in the world, and it's the worst thing in the world. And so it provides so much more information. It makes everything in the world available at your fingertips. You're able to, the social media has been so great for the church. This is certainly something I've seen in the work that I do with Lutheran Satire, where you're able to just throw ideas out there and throw theology out there and a good confession of faith, hopefully, out there. And anyone can cling to it, and you can find people who, you know, may have been too intimidated to walk into a church that they didn't know anything about, who are able to kind of get their first taste of what it is that they actually need via social networking and things of that nature. So there are wonderful things that can happen from it, but there's also obviously terrible stuff that can happen too. And, you know, so I suppose one of the kind of one of the challenges before us is, well, how do we find a good way to filter out the really negative stuff? How do we protect ourselves from that? How do we block that stuff off? And I don't know that there's a real perfect answer, but there are certainly steps we can take at doing that. And most certainly one of them is, you know, I'm certainly a serial offender in this way. We don't need to be checking our Facebook and Twitter accounts 500 times a day. That there's a far greater joy to be had from just shutting stuff down and interacting with real people.
Well, I've often said the reason God lets my 17-year-old truck break down as often as it is to get me off of social media.
Yeah.
It gets me outside. Little fresh That's air, right. Little dirt under my fingers, and it gets me off of social media.
Yeah.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. He's creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column, Why It's Terrible News That Millennials Are Having Less Sex. You can read it and find out more about Lutheran Satire under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thank you very much.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, Dr. Mark Burkholz joins us. We're going to be remembering, along with the church, Aquila, Priscilla, Apollos, and they're all fellow workers of St. Paul. Aquila and Priscilla, in more than one sense, and Apollos, well, he kind of comes along for the ride, and has a certain prominence himself. We'll talk about all of that right after the break.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Risen Savior Lutheran Church, Basser, Kansas. Located just right outside the northwest corner of the metro Kansas City area, we have a growing congregation of people who come from over 13 different communities to see what God is doing here, who desire to only believe, teach, confess, and practice as the church always has. Risen Savior, Basser, Kansas. Check out our website, risensaviorlcms.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.